Hi, and welcome to Night Clerk Radio. This is episode 6, Dungeon Synth. And with me, as always, is Burke, my co-host.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going great. Tonight, we're going to be talking about a very interesting minor subgenre of music, Dungeon Synth. It is technically descended from black metal, and it's got its own thing going on. It is not quite synthwave, not quite, definitely not vaporwave.
No.
It is, in its own way, haunted. We'll talk a little bit about that. If you've ever rolled dice or played computer RPG, you would probably be interested in Dungeon Synth. Yeah, this is a new genre to you, wasn't it, Burke?
Yeah. I mean, I've heard of it just through association with tabletop role-playing games and people discussing it, but I never really sat down and listened to it. I didn't even really know it was technically a subgenre of dark ambient. So that was even starting at the absolute base level of what this genre is. So all new to me.
Yeah, I'll be honest here, listeners. I'm not a huge fan of this genre in the sense that I listen to it all the time. I do listen to it. I do enjoy it. But it is definitely not on my regular playlist routine or rotation. There are times when I really get into it and I listen to it quite a bit and then I'll drift away from it for a while. I mean, I think overall, everyone who has ever played a video game RPG is susceptible to liking Dungeon Synth because this is the same style. Well, it's similar music. It's more complex and more and a lot more interesting than a lot of these things in the typical video game RPG soundtrack because, you know, the soundtrack is only like 10 songs looped over and over again. While these are a little more complex. But if you liked crawling through dungeons and especially older video game RPGs, or if you are a fan of fantasy, you would definitely find it's worth to try it out to see if you like it.
Yeah.
The one thing I was interested in, again, is that this started as sort of side projects of European black metal musicians.
Yeah, exactly. It's like people going to hang out at the Renfest for a weekend, but sonically.
I mean, if you think about it, the Venn diagram of heavy metal fans, black metal fans, and fantasy fans in some ways is almost a circle because there is a pretty big overlap between shredding and wishing you were a Viking on a saga going out to slay dragons. They take this very these ancient ideas and motifs of music. You know, it's a lot of it owes a lot to folk music and medieval music. Then they say, well, let's put it on the most modern instrument of all, the synthesizer. Mm-hmm. So I think part of that maybe have been practical, like these are side projects of individual musicians, and so they can't afford to hire, you know, an orchestra and a chorus to like bring their Tolkien-esque music to life.
And that really makes sense, especially in the metal community, since a lot of this, especially I think what we're discussing tonight, originated in Europe, like through Germany and Norway and the like, because that's where a lot of this sort of like folk Tolkien kind of metal comes from. Like you said, sort of that appeal to that.
Yeah.
Viking culture is probably part of their sort of cultural mythology.
Yeah.
I was wondering, since this sort of is music that appeals to like a medieval renaissance that doesn't exist, is this by length of time the most haunted music that we've had?
I mean, some of it is haunted by, like there's some Dungeon Synth producers who literally like, we're basing it on Chaucer. You know, there's like a 3-hour epic album based on Chaucer's.
I always think that fantasy stuff is always so glamorous in its portrayal when you'd really just kind of be covered in shit and disease. And
well, that's the thing, is it's not by the actual history. Dungeon Synth is haunted by this imagination. Like, I mean, it has in common with fantasy role-playing games, the idea that you're going on a quest. Remember, there's also a very specific stylistic theming for this. Almost all Dungeon Synth is about wizards and warriors and like the forests of eternity, as you know, we'll see, like the album tracks.
Yeah.
Album art is very specific. And so it's evocative of sagas and myths, not like the actual historical life. There's not much about like, well, here's our 12 album or our 12 song album about being a guild carpenter at a small town and
one track for each year of the plague.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, a lot of Dungeon Synth, there's also kind of a generational thing too, I think. Newer Dungeon Synth, as we're going to have a very generational look at two albums, one from the 90s all the way back there to one released last year. The newer ones are far more influenced by video games.
Oh yeah.
It's not like the new video games. Like there's these new musicians doing music that's inspired by like 80s video game RPGs, like The Bard's Tale and Ultima and Wizardry.
Yeah.
Stuff that you would hear on a Commodore 64. Like what is the most magical, musical, fantastic escape you can shove through an Apple II. That's that's what you're going to listen on this album. It's a very interesting aesthetic.
Yeah.
Like this idea of anachronistic technology, fantasy, you know, this very romantic, mythic thing, and then using the internet to distribute it and put it out. So yeah, it's the fact that it exists at all is fascinating to me. Mm-hmm. And the fact that it is still so closely tied to metal. After a long day of metal and screaming, you know, Cookie Monster roaring about the apocalypse, you kind of need to chill out after a while.
Yeah, it's interesting. This is maybe not the right word because I think it applies to a lot of genres. But what's interesting to me is that it's sort of just kind of evolved naturally, organically out of people's side projects. It wasn't like a response to anything.
Yeah, that's true.
It just sort of naturally, people in black metal bands in the 80s and 90s were like, I got some time to kill during between gigs.
Yeah.
Get my keyboard and make some creepy synth shit.
Yeah, the sensitive side. Well, I mean,
yeah,
that's the thing. A lot of this, people link this to Dark Omen, and certainly there is a lot of variety in dungeon synth in terms of mood and tempo, but like, the albums we listen to are not like, I would not call dark ambient, except in parts. Mm-mm. They're very, you know, obviously I think the key here is adventure. Like you just want to go out and just kill some dragons, explore some dungeons. It's not very drony or pessimistic. Mm-mm. Except in the sense that you're not actually doing that. So you're just missing this opportunity that, of course.
Or if they do that, it's part of like a larger kind of adventure story that the album's telling. Mm-hmm. So it makes sense. It's not.
Yeah.
It's just a small part of the overall experience.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of it would be nostalgia too for like the times you were role playing with your friends, playing your fantasy RPG of choice. Mm-hmm. You miss those times and you want to reminisce about them.
The good old days when I liked D&D.
Exactly. Or Rolemaster.
Oh, no.
Yeah. I have some critical hit tables for you.
Can't believe you.
Yeah, I know. I am a monster. So we should probably get into the first album.
Absolutely. A bit from the opening track to this album. The track is Forests of Eternity. The album, it was originally released as Depressive Silence 2, a demo for this project, Depressive Silence, which was kind of this synth side project by a German musician, Raw, who was in black metal bands at the time. It was originally released in 1996, absolutely considered a classic of the genre, so much so that 20 years later, it was re-released in 2016. And renamed Morning. I went with this album because I don't have a lot of experience with dungeon synth, like I said. So why not do some essential listening? I'll start by saying that I did, you know, I always open with verdict is I did like this album. Mm-hmm. I was somewhat concerned thematically because I don't know a lot about this genre. And I'll be honest, like I don't care about fantasy adventure. Like it's not a set of tropes that really interests me. So I was curious how deeply that would be embedded. And actually, I'm really glad that I sort of got over that and gave this a listen because this album is really interesting. There's a lot of swinging between epic and calming. And there's like this ethereal droning stuff. And then these like really articulate melodies over these underpinning arpeggiated string things going on. It's got a lot of musicality compared to what we normally listen. And I really, really dug that. What did you think?
I quite enjoyed it. This is, again, yeah, I listened to more like our next album, that style, which is a little different, mm-hmm. a little more chiptune-y, I guess you would describe it.
Yeah.
But I still quite enjoyed the title Morning. You would think it would be darker, but it's quite, I wouldn't say upbeat, but for me, the main mood of this album is yearning, and that's yearning for adventure, to go out and to explore and to see and to do. And it's every single title gives it sort of like a different geographical sense. Like the first track, The Force of Eternity, does feel like you are walking through this majestic AF forest. The second one you feel is the oceans, of the depths of the oceans. And that does, like with the harp and the synth string section, it does feel like you are, you know, sailing. Every single section gives it this kind of and then you get the chorus for atmosphere as you're flying through the air. That it really feels like Rawl wishes he had been reincarnated as a knight, you know, in the Middle Earth.
Mm-hmm.
He really does love this. It responds to him on a personal level, and you can feel that in the music, and I dig that.
Yeah, I really agree. One thing of the sound of the album is that this is like true old school lo-fi.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that vibe really works. Like it's clearly just a guy with a keyboard and a multi-track playing around with the various patches on his synth.
I thought he does sneak in a couple of like field recordings or sound effects of like the thunder.
Yeah.
And like a couple of atmospheric things, like again, to give a more environmental feel, but like it's pretty faint. But yeah, it's definitely like a single dude with a synthesizer.
Mm-hmm. Very low-key production, very low budget. And I think that really works because it's sort of, you know, if you want to interact with your imagination, like if you're a kid playing pretend, you generally have to, what am I trying to say? I don't know. Just it gives it that extra sense of wonder because there's really somebody just on their own thinking about it and creating something out of their imagination of, like you said, something that means something to them.
Yeah, no, there's quite a bit of drama to this. It's never, but it's never in the sense like a movie soundtrack would be, where like there's no like obvious, this is the fight and this is gonna like, or this is the big betrayal, or you know, there it's more even keeled throughout. Like there are highs and lows to it, but it does not fully draw your attention like a soundtrack would. So it's really great to listen to. I mean, if I wasn't recording, you know, my RPG sessions for a podcast, I'd probably put this on a loop for running, or on a very large playlist for running my next fantasy adventure, you know, if I was running your fantasy RPG of choice. It's definitely works in that sense. Or if you get bored of your video game soundtrack of choice, you could easily mute that and put this on while you're grinding something in an MMO or something. This would be way better.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, this kind of got the start. And like, I can see for the genre that there was nothing like this back in the 90s, or there, like the idea that people could listen to this, like metalheads were just like, oh my God. Again, I'm just fascinated by all these metalheads just like responding to this on a deep and personal level. Like, oh yes, I want to be a bard in an inn drinking ale with my dwarven and elven buddies right after we get out of the Gwar concert.
And the metal aspect is also interesting to me because I think it really comes through in a lot of the music. Like I said, when I first heard about the genre being black metal influenced, you know, you don't really know what to take from that because that seems so at odds with dark ambient. But I think that not just the themes and the aesthetic, but I think a lot of that musicality gets brought into this album.
Yeah.
So like I said, there's a lot of really nice, like intricate little strings parts, and they all hang out under these like really soaring melodies. And those melodies are very well played and again, very articulate and just really work for me. They're cliche in a good way. They're one of those cliches that works. And I think that really comes through in making these songs listenable in an interesting way.
Yeah, it's a mellow album, but that sort of holds your attention. But there's also a lot of variance in every single track. The first track, again, with the forest, you get a lot of the flutes and this sort of rolling over, sort of riding through the forest sense. And then by the end, it gets more ethereal with these, you know, the dreams. I think it all loops together back quite well.
So I think we'll give people a little sample, kind of what we're talking about. So here's a little bit from this album. So that was a little selection from the third track, Atmosphere. There's only five tracks, I guess, on the album.
Yeah, the tracks are quite long, though.
Yeah.
7 to 9 minutes.
And I really liked this because there's this transition to being much more reverby, and it really feels, I think it goes from being a very clean track to a very reverby track, like you're almost going down into a dungeon. Mm-hmm. You know, you're stepping into these echoing hallways and you don't know what out is out in front of you, and it becomes very mysterious. And I really sort of like that bit of storytelling in the track.
Yeah, there is, in pretty much every Dungeon Synth album, you do get a very strong narrative sense. Every Dungeon Synth album I've listened to has a very careful selection of track titles and album art to sort of evoke what kind of story they're trying to tell. Because, you know, a lot of times, especially in these sort of subgenres, you get like, this is the album, and then every single track is kind of like a variation on a theme. It's a very static sense. I mean, you get that a lot more in like ambient and dark ambient, but in Dungeon Synth albums, you do get a lot of variants where some album tracks are going to be very ambient like, but then some are going to be like, oh, this is the battle song and we're killing some monsters in this one. Or more even horror, where like, oh, we're confronting a cosmic evil, or this is the, you know, oh, we're victory, you know, we've won, or we found some great treasure. So I do quite appreciate that sort of narrative construction, because again, people in Dungeon Synth are haunted by their imaginations and what they've lost or what they can't ever have.
Mm-hmm. To switch topics just slightly, one thing that's I wondered if you had any thoughts on was sort of the historical significance of this album, having listened to No Dungeon Synth. Mm-hmm. I'm curious how this one is good. Mm-hmm. I'd have to listen to more probably to understand how this one. It's interesting that this album is sort of the classic album that's at the top of every like essentials list and got a re-release and renaming and like proper art and updating kind of 20 years later. Mm-hmm. What do you think of it as a essential listen of the genre? Do you have any thoughts on that? I don't know.
Yeah. It's Mourning or Depressive Silence Too, whatever you want to call it, is, yeah, I'm more used to sort of a, like our next album, which is a more, like I really do like chiptune. I do listen a lot, and like Dungeons and a lot of the art is very chiptune and based. It's very, very low end, like cheap synthesizer MIDI sound that like video game machines put out that I really like. Ooh, I respond to that on a, you know, instinctual level. This one is not quite that. The style of synthesizer is different. I do like the strings, though. I do like the string heavy nature of this album. Mm-hmm. And it's certainly well composed. I would, like I said, I would put this on a playlist. Yeah, it's just a little different. It's not quite the same.
Yeah.
You know, it's a very minor variation. Maybe I'm being pedantic by this, but like I like the ones that sound like a Nintendo that's been run over and buried, and then like someone, you know, blew the dirt out and it plays.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I tend to agree. I also really like this, but I think most of what I want to talk about it for this album is best sort of in the context in comparison to our next album. Mm-hmm. So unless you have any final thoughts, do you want to move on to our second album?
Yeah, I don't have any final thoughts. Pretty much that was it. I appreciate its place in history.
Yes.
And I think it's worth listening to a few times. I don't know if I would put this on a heavy rotation. Our next album is one I actually have listened to. I actually have even like bought the album and put it on my phone, so I could listen to it, and I do every once in a while. So yeah, I guess that sort of says it all, doesn't it?
Absolutely. And everything else that I want to say is in the context of the next album. So we're definitely going to revisit this in a few minutes, but I just need to move on in the nicest way.
Yeah. Was the opening of Riding Through the Wildlands, which is the first track from the Valley of the Forgotten Secrets from Kobold, a group that is part of or comes out of a record label known as Hamet der Katastrophe, the homeland of Katastrophe, which is on Bandcamp, and they put out a ton of Dungeon Synth albums. This album is the third part of a trilogy of Dungeon Synth albums that Kobold has produced, all about essentially an RPG scenario that is tied into it about adventurers on some quest, obviously, and they have to save the day. So this album, we'll talk about this album first. I do want to talk about that record label a little bit.
Okay.
They have some real interesting things going on with them, but this is sort of a newer, when you look up Dungeons & now, a lot of this is sort of in this style. Not only the sound, like I mentioned earlier, this is very chiptune sort of inspired, where it's clearly very MIDI, very like low end synthesizer sort of focused. And they also bundle this with sort of an OSR aesthetic. The OSR meaning the old school Renaissance, which is sort of a subgenre of fantasy role-playing games, which tries to emulate the style and aesthetic of the first sort of generation of RPG scenarios that came out, not just from Dungeons and Dragons, but all the various knockoffs where they have, you know, grid paper and very deadly traps and ridiculous monsters. And it was very, it's its own style. And so these albums often are released with actual OSR adventures in the liner notes of the album, at least in the cassette form, and which they do not put in the as a PDF in the digital release, to my chagrin. I quite enjoyed this album. The opening hooked me alone because it really does give you the sense of like an exciting chase, and the entire album sort of goes off on this quest, and there's quite a bit of stylistic change within it, but all within this sort of very limited, gritty sort of lo-fi chiptune aesthetic. So what did you think, Burke?
Yeah, I also thought this album was interesting and liked it. The OSR thing was really interesting to me because, first of all, on this album, it is so blatant. It's right on the album cover that it's
yeah,
an OSR reference. And, you know,
I mean, the title is basically a scenario title, too. It's like the Valley of the Forgotten Secrets.
Yeah. And, you know, and Kobold's a classic low level enemy in D&D and everything, which is, from thinking about it as like a nostalgic standpoint of music, I think that's interesting because, at least in my kind of limited research, I feel like there's a point where D&D became more of like a codified nostalgic point of reference, because a lot of the old stuff, like Depressive Silence, it's obviously an adventure. And like you said, you could play it while you're playing your role master, Peyton. It doesn't like allude to it directly. Whereas now I think a lot of this Dungeon Synth has sort of latched on to that resurgence of tabletop role-playing games in the last 10-ish years.
Not only that, but also what they specifically say on the Bandcamp page, as always inspired by the soundtracks of 8 and 16-bit CRPGs, computer RPGs of the 80s and 90s, they're also not only looking at tabletop games, but they're also looking at the 8 and 16-bit, the Nintendo and Super Nintendo and Sega Genesis, and those, that sort of generation, that era, the 80s and 90s video game consoles and computers. So it's kind of like this whole messy package of like video games and tabletop games and sort of like blending it all together in sort of a repackaged nostalgia.
It just becomes more like, not in a bad way, but it does feel more like a blatant nostalgia repacking compared to Depressive Silence, which is much more of like a wistful longing for adventure in your own time.
Yeah, no, this is very blatant. Like, I did listen to, not as much into chiptune as I used to be, but like I listened to a lot of Saber Pulse and other artists. And so listening to this, of like a very chiptune artist, almost all just, it's very sort of upbeat and limited, and like it's very Nintendo game music, title or menu music is sort of like,
yeah,
there's a lot more variance because each track gives you sort of a sense of like what kind of mood they're going for. And so like the second track, In at the Edge of the World, is more restive. And then of course, track 10, The Abyss Horror, is like horror, you know, chiptune essentially. And then the Nocturnal Crossing of the Lizardmen Village is very specific, very tense.
Yeah.
You get this whole journey. And despite this, it because of it's all stays within the chiptune area, it doesn't like distract you as, again, some more demanding albums would. So again, it's really good as playlist music or as music for background for your own tabletop adventure or playing on an MMO.
Yeah. And I do, you know, also I did used to listen to quite a bit of chiptunes. I think I've mentioned before that was sort of one of my inroads into vaporwave many years ago. So I do really like that. Like, I agree that, because when I was researching the genre itself, just sort of background material, there is all these references to video game music. And I was listening to Depressive Silence. I was like, I don't know. I don't really hear video games in this.
No.
And then I fired this up and it was like, oh. There's my square waves.
Yeah.
There's my like weird pseudo percussion in the background. It really does sound like an SNES soundtrack, mm-hmm. like a 16-bit mm-hmm. chiptune soundtrack. Like something would be, I don't know, it made me think of, not that it sounds like it, but like Ghouls and Ghosts, Ghouls and Goblins, mm-hmm. you know, all those old fantasy.
Oh, sure. Sure. I mean, it's interesting that like somebody who's really inspired and motivated by this genre of fantasy is then like, instead of trying to replicate the closest thing to have that in reality, you know, like folk music or medieval music with real instruments, they go the opposite tact of like taking synthesizers and creating very technological music that evokes a technological genre or format. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to make sense. It's all about how it emotionally impacts you.
Absolutely.
It is more blatant in terms of like, I do agree with you. It is very blatant in how it's repackaging it. But you know, one thing I wonder about Dungeon Synth is like, is this all based on nostalgia, or are there like younger people who didn't grow up with this type of game, but are discovering it anew and are like fascinated by it?
That's interesting. I don't know, because certainly now it's, if you look at someone younger, I don't know if this is like old manning it, but sort of the modern I guess the modern reference point for like low fantasy video games is Skyrim, mm-hmm. which is a modern game,
yeah,
comparatively, right?
Yeah,
which is back in an era of higher technology, so you can go back to the music you hear in Skyrim almost sounds like the original Dungeon Synth, which was just aping off medieval and Renaissance music.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's like jumped back, like, because something like Cobalt is of a very specific era of low music technology reproduction. Like you can do a lot with chiptunes, and I think a lot of that stuff is really intricate. Mm-hmm. But in terms of like reproducing that real instrument sort of feel, we've kind of looped back around to that.
That's true. Yeah. God, that's really interesting. Yeah. The Skyrim soundtrack does sound like,
yeah,
depressive silence. Like there is a bit of that in there.
Yeah.
Man, it all loops around. God.
Nostalgia is a flat circle.
Yeah, but it can't all be. Yeah, it's just like these people making it can't all be like just the nostalgic people who grew up with it. There have to be younger people working on it. I've seen them. Like there are people, I mean, there's people who speedrun video games that weren't even there were out before they were born. You know, if you look at like, you know, Games Done Quick and that kind of awesome Games Done Quick.
Yeah, I think there's like a access to information issue too, mm-hmm. where people, I don't think this is particularly new, but people do have nostalgia for times that they didn't live in. There's like a meta cultural nostalgia that's like you're almost programmed into. Mm-hmm. Even though people who are born in the 80s or 90s, they sort of like, oh, I wish it was like in the 60s when life was simpler. Mm-hmm. I watched this movie, or I really like listening to this old classic rock that my dad listened to or whatever. There's sort of that the wrong generation type attitude.
Yeah, yeah. You grew up, but you were born in the wrong era. Yeah.
So I can see that transitioning over to this, where maybe you're getting into, I'm going to use tabletop role-playing games probably as my primary mm-hmm. here because it's what I play. You know, maybe now you're getting into like 5th ed Dungeons and Dragons, but oh, on Stranger Things, they're playing BD&D.
Yeah.
I want to try that. And then you sort of get pulled into this whole, oh, well, now this album sounds like something that they would listen to while they play 2nd ed Dungeons and Dragons. We so accurately record previous experiences that you don't really actually have to live in a time to have nostalgia for it anymore.
That's true. That's like, yeah, that's a really good point. I think there's another phenomenon too, at least for this particular case, not in all of them, but like at least for vis-a-vis the OSR and sort of this old school aesthetic, is that there's this sort of elitism where they want to distinguish themselves because like they perceive like, oh, that's too mainstream. And this, the OSR, oh, things are more dangerous and difficult and like hardcore. Mm-hmm. And making a, you know, sort of lo-fi, like chiptune dungeon crawling music. Because like, if you look at the sort of HDK, the record label that put this out, all of their, they have dozens of these albums, Dungeon Synth albums that they put out. They're all like gritty adventurers dealing with some shit. So like the doom in the eyes of a skeletal king by Thongar. There is the Druid's Apprentice by Withmahar. Yeah, exactly. One thing I do like is that Dungeon Synth is starting to mutate out a little bit into different genres. In a sense, it's no longer exclusively, it's like still like 95% high fantasy D&D/Tolkien-esque fantasy.
Okay.
But like on HDK, you can see Dungeon Synth that's being made that's sort of like Fallout or Wasteland inspired. Like there's HDK 42, Tunguska, the wonders of atomic mutation. Mm-hmm. And then if you scroll down a bit, HDK 15 is Kowloon Neon City Episode 1. But yeah, they're sort of spreading out because like a lot of this OSR thing, the old school Renaissance is sort of, they sort of back in the 70s and 80s, they didn't really see fantasy and science fiction as like super distinct genres. So like you could have ray guns in a D&D adventure or a wizard in a sci-fi adventure. So they're kind of blending these genres together a little bit. I kind of like that idea. So it's sort of this re-evoking this kind of idea in the 80s of, we'll just mix all this stuff together. Whatever's cool.
Yeah, definitely.
I like the Dungeon Synth albums that really go and like try different. They're not just like thematically fantasy based. There's got an interesting story to it as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the narrative element is pretty important for me to be interested in a Dungeon Synth album. I will say that.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's one of the reasons I maybe liked Cobalt a little bit more, because I felt like it had more of a story, mm-hmm. not just through the track titles, but how those track titles related to the style of music.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. Mourning is very ambiguous. It's like mm-hmm. to mean a journey in general, but not like a specific journey.
Yeah. It's like a dream.
Yeah, exactly. And in this one, it's like, no, they're going to this valley. They got to.
Now they're fighting lizard men and now they're resting after fighting lizard men.
Exactly. So they have to find this lost talisman, man. That's some shit's going down. Yeah, but if you look through all these other HDK albums, like again, the Wonders of Atomic Mutation is about, you know, mysterious things happening in Tunguska in Siberia and some shit's going down. Yeah, each of these has little pamphlets that come out with them with the explaining this story. Yeah, like if you go to Valley of the Forgotten Secrets, you will see like little photos that they have of what's included in the liner notes of the album.
Oh cool.
Yeah, and some of these records put out by HDK have a lot more, like I said, literal little RPG scenarios written for them, and I'm so mad that I can never, like, they only have a small limited run of like 20 copies or something like that, like something ridiculously dumb, and then like,
yeah,
so by the time I realize it's there, it's already sold out. Someday I'll get my album OSR Adventure so I can run it.
Unless you want to go drop a couple hundred on Discogs or something.
Yeah, that's kind of the downside. My weakness might overwhelm me at some point. But if you troll the Dungeon Synth tag on Bandcamp, you can find there are obviously hundreds of albums out there. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of it's almost like trolling your game store and like looking at what modules are available. So that's why I find it fascinating, why I occasionally troll through it and listen to some of these albums, because it's like, ooh, this is a cool concept. I like that.
Do you want to introduce any tracks or have any other samples or?
I did mention actually, why don't we listen to track 10, The Abyss Horror, because that's the sort of the really darkest and more, it's almost like it's like a horror chiptune song. So
that's my favorite.
So yeah, that was The Abyss Horror. You get a sense like from the writing through the wild lines, what we listened to earlier to The Abyss Horror, what we just listened to now. Kobold's pretty talented in like getting this chiptune sound to evoke different atmospheres, different moods. I quite enjoy that.
I agree. This is probably my favorite track on the album. My entire metric for that being, it's the one that made me sit up and look at the YouTube description to see which track I was listening to.
Yeah, fair enough.
I really like that dark, repetitious sort of fantasy aesthetic. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like you said, it does a great job of recreating that Super Nintendo goodness. It's just all around like a really interesting kind of midpoint. Mm-hmm. or just beyond the midpoint of this album.
One note is also this final part in their liner notes, or at least on the Bandcamp site, they say the artwork of this release is a tribute to old D&D artists of the 80s. The final part of the Three Dangerous Artifacts is also a tribute to the song A New Earth by the Norwegian pagan metal band Einhjern. They're still into metal. They're still into, you know, Norwegian pagan.
Yeah.
So
that part never left.
It all loops back around.
But the D&D artist totally makes sense. So go down to the show notes and click on the link for this album. Mm-hmm. That cassette cover looks exactly like a BD&D mm-hmm. splat book. They really nailed it.
Yeah, but there's a little, like, if you click down on the cassette thing, you can see the album that they have. They shove in a little full module or something. Mm-hmm. And they didn't like make a PDF of it to include in the digital version. It's just for the people who bought the record.
I'm sad I don't have it, but I also love that sort of exclusive kind of, this is a thing that only you can get.
Exactly. I kind of someday I'll own one.
Someday.
Future Patreon goal or something. That's Dungeon Synth in a nutshell. We'll of course revisit this at some point once we find some more albums, but we have a lot more to review, of course.
Absolutely. There's a lot out there.
Thanks for listening to this episode. We hope you enjoy this little dungeon delve into Dungeon Synth. On our next episode, we're going back to Vaporwave to dig into the subgenre of Vapor Trap, which is sort of Vaporwave plus trap / hip hop music. So it's more got a faster beat. It's got a beat, which you can't really say for a lot of Vaporwave. We'll have some interesting music for you. Some of the artists, we have to figure out how to pronounce some of the artist names first, of course.
Yeah, it's going to take us some time.
Thank you for listening to this episode. We are at Night Cleric Radio on Twitter. I am at Ross Payton on Twitter.
I am at Burke McBurkinson.
Please share, rate, and review our podcast. Let your friends know. Rating and reviewing us on Apple Podcasts or your podcasting app of choice, of course, helps out. Of course, thank you for listening. Please comment. The suggestions, feedback are all welcome. Until then, keep on exploring those dungeons.